cushions and blankets, and that's about it. So, I was looking through the podcast site where all the talks for the last 2 years are, and it's how I keep track of what I've covered. And of course, all the talks are basically about how to reduce stress and how to bring about tranquility and peace in our lives. But I noticed I hadn't given a talk in a long time. In fact, there wasn't a talk on right livelihood. So it's actually an important subject, and it's very illuminating. So I thought, just for the sake of making it available and for disabusing a lot of misconceptions about what right livelihood is in the Buddhist teachings, I'd go over it. And I think when we find out more about it, it's actually a pretty fascinating topic. The Buddha was not a proselytizer. He didn't go around, even when he taught to some very, very cutthroat kings and merchants, he didn't ever say to them, "Hey, you son of a bitch, you exploitative right-wing schmuck, you." His theory was more to introduce the basics of what causes suffering in life, and if he realized that if when asked, he explained that, eventually they would become cognizant that causing harm to other beings causes suffering for ourselves. And that eventually, as was very often the case, they would see through the errors of their ways and on their own give up the harmful actions that they were involved in. In a way, this is very true to my own experience. Like any young, first leftist Marxist and then Buddhist follower, I had my times when I was pretty in people's faces. And I came to the conclusion after years of struggle for the good cause that it doesn't work getting up in people's faces. That people have to realize for themselves that we have to come about from our own wisdom, seeing that we're causing harm to ourselves and others. And the best way is simply to make information available, but without being asked, just run up to people and start preaching. And my experience rarely has profitable results. So when pressed, though, there was there's a number of times in the canon where a soldier went up to the Buddha and asked him three times, "So, you know, I make my living killing people and rampaging and pillaging." I like the word pillaging. It's never been on my resume, but it's a nice word. Pillaging. So, what do you make of that? And finally, when pressed three times, the Buddha is... there's something in the canon about when you're asked three times, you give an answer. So the Buddha finally says, "Well, if your job requires you to want to kill people and cause harm, then yes, your future mind states will almost invariably be really dark and unpleasant." And now, if we look at the statistics of PTSD among soldiers who've been in battle, I think the Buddha's reply is not that wildly off base. PTSD is so prevalent amongst those who've served in the armed forces. I think the Buddha's response is very wise. But it's also interesting that, again, that he doesn't immediately tell the soldier off. He waits until the soldier has become persistent and demands an answer. in another place in the canon, there's one point where the Buddha lists five occupations that he says will almost invariably cause suffering for ourselves. Luckily for me, art direction isn't one of them, so there's a... But he did mention dealing in slaves. And if you're dealing in slaves, I really hope you're not. Okay, let's just put that out there. Some of them are easy for us. There's selling weapons. Now, we're in the South, or Arizona. This would probably be more alarming. But I'm going to run with the idea that very few of you are actively trading and selling arms. So, but you can see why these could cause future challenging mind states. Then it becomes a little bit, with each one, it becomes more and more, a little bit more challenging. There's dealing in or profiting from poisons. Now, some of us hear that and we say, well, that's, who would want to deal in poisons? But actually, I was working at a company and they asked me to work on a project for a company that spent, I found out, a lot of money subsidizing political funds that kept plastic bags that were unrecyclable in the world and put out all this misinformation and outright lies about recyclable bags. They would have, this company would have had you believe that recyclable bags are bad for you and unrecyclable bags are good. And I couldn't do it. Because to me, that's actively participating in poisoning. Now, obviously, if I didn't do all that research and I had no idea that they were doing that, the karma would not have affected me until I found that out. So this is not about going up to someone and saying, hey, blah, 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 you're a schmuck, you're working for this company that's filtering money. It's not the way it works. We have to become open to, when we're ready, finding out what it is in the world we're doing. And now I'm much more inquisitive because I'm much less comfortable just not knowing. Because I've seen in my life when I don't know what it is I'm participating in, sometimes I find out stuff that makes me very uncomfortable. So I like to know, but that's just me. Finally, there's the two that causes the most concern, and I'm not going to make any grandiose statements about them. And if you work in these two domains, all it means is simply be aware, be mindful, and see if it's causing you any suffering. The Buddha said, finally, trading in meat or getting people intoxicated. Now, a lot of people who work as bartenders or who might work in steakhouses, I suppose, hear this and they're like, oh my God, I'm screwed. That's not what the Buddha is saying. He's saying that these are areas of investigation that we should be open to, rather than just immediately quit our jobs. This is more, all of the Buddha's teachings are guides. They're not, there's no God in this teaching. There's nothing up there judging you. These are simply guides or suggestions to bear in mind and to use as things to inquire into what the effects of our lives are doing to our mental landscape, our inner experience. Now, that's just a portion, though, of right livelihood that, listen, it's really important, again, to remember that this is not about proselytizing or absolutes. The Buddha really grows this list out of his teaching on the precepts, which are the foundations for virtue, which are, if we want to have peaceful minds, we don't kill, we don't steal, we don't lie, we don't engage in intoxication that causes suffering or sex that causes suffering. So basically the idea is to see if anything that we're engaged in our lives, is it in any way causing us to lie, develop greed, develop a sense of constant feeling of competitiveness with everybody else, a feeling that, or is there a sense of trying to take from other people? Is there a sense of trying to do harm at other people's expense? So we can basically look at our what we do in the world from this perspective, the perspective of the precepts. The way I like to think about it is, to use a rather, I think, an apt analogy, there's all these people now that would have us believe, I guess, that fracking is safe, you know, but that it will stay, the poisons will stay contained in a small area. And mining companies would have us believe that polluted groundwater will just stay polluted in a small little area, that it won't seep into any other area. And when people are engaged in this kind of unskillful behavior, they really want to believe that it's limited to one small region. But actually, just like pollution doesn't know any state boundaries or any boundaries, when we are engaged in one area of our life in unskillfulness, it doesn't stay contained in that neat little spot. If my livelihood requires me to lie, is that lying going to simply stop when I leave the job? No. We might want to tell ourselves that, but that's not the case. Once I think that lying to another being, or exaggerating, or being harmful in my speech, or harming someone else, once I think that's okay in one area of my life, that, as neuroscientists say, neurons that fire together wire together. I'm planting what my mind is going to be. I'm creating what my habits are going to be. I'm creating how I'm going to relate to every other being in my life. I can't contain unskillfulness in one part of my life. This idea that I can sort of somehow keep it tucked away. Yeah, well, my job is pretty shitty, but it's all right. You know, I'm not going to, you know, that's okay. If I'm doing something that I'm ashamed of or that I wouldn't be proud of in any region of my life, it's not going to stay contained. So we should just be mindful of this and be aware. I don't want to do anything that I wouldn't be proud of saying that I do it. That if somebody asks me, you know, what I do. I personally design websites. I'm not ashamed of that. Just what I do for a living. It allows me to teach here. But let's go further. When we read the early Buddhist teachings on right livelihood, really when livelihood is talked about, it's even more so than does it involve acting unskillfully? Really what it's about is seeing the level of attachment we have to any part of our lives, and is that attachment being brought into the other parts of our lives. What I mean by this is if I'm thinking about work when I'm meditating, or when I'm trying to fall asleep, or when I'm talking with a friend, or when I'm with my family or whatever, if I'm thinking about my job in other parts of my life, that's attachment. Attachment is not holding on to something physically. Attachment, upadana, means carrying a thought around with me, being unable to put it down. So anything that I can't put down for a while, that seeps into other parts of my life, is attachment. If I'm at work thinking about my relationship, what's that? Attachment. If on the other hand I'm in my relationship thinking about work, that's attachment. Attachment is carrying the past or the future into the present when it has nothing to do with what's going on right here and now. If I'm arguing in my mind with somebody who's not here, what is that? Attachment. There we go. So you've all passed the test. You know what attachment is. It's whenever we bring a thought that's not about what's applicable right here, right now, into a situation where it's not useful. That's something that we're attached to. And meditation is extremely helpful, not only for disentangling our minds from all the things that bait us in the world and get the drama building, but it also shows us where we're over-attached. Because any thought I bring into the time when I'm practicing developing peace in my life is an area of my life where I'm attached. So, the point of livelihood is to have something that we can bring our focus, our best practices, our creativity while we're doing it, and then when we're not doing it, we put it down and we do whatever is appropriate next. Just like the analogy of a heart surgeon. If there was a great heart surgeon, the only man who could perform a very, very life-saving operation, and there were hundreds of patients waiting to see him, you wouldn't want that heart patient to get, that heart doctor to be so attached to any one of the patients visiting him that all the others didn't get a chance for his attention. You'd want him to greet, see each patient, to work with them as much as he could, as much as equanimity and balance would allow, as much as his karma and his skills would allow. You'd want him to work with them, and then you'd want him to be able to move on to help the next patient. You wouldn't want him to get so attached to this one patient that the other 99 didn't get any help. All the things in our lives that we do, whether it's conversations with our loved ones or families or friends, the things that we do in the rest of our lives, what's known as right livelihood, deserve our awareness, our attention, and our mindfulness. If we're bringing another story about our jobs or our relationships there, then we're not aware if we're being skillful when we talk to people. We're not aware if we're bringing them all the wisdom we can, if we're being as gentle as we can. The less aware we are, the more reactive we are, the more prone we are to get into needless arguments and debates and fights because we're not fully available. So very much the process of disattachment is simply knowing when to let go, as is the practice of meditation, knowing how and when to let go of the stories of the rest of our lives. That's what we're practicing when we practice meditation. That's why it's so important as a check for right livelihood. Now, last two subjects, very briefly. The Buddha, in a sense, was a he was somebody who was aware of the amount of results that every little interaction we are engaged in can have on other people. What I mean by this is, for example, food doesn't just magically appear in stores. A farmer had to do a lot of work. Somebody had to drive it there, or, I guess a cattle or a pig had to give up its life, probably not willingly. They probably didn't say, oh, I want humans to be happy, so I throw myself down before the blade, like I know how they kill cattle. The blade before you extend. What the fuck am I on about? I don't know. So anyway, But there's suffering involved. There's also often exploitation. I'm going to read you a quote by a famous Buddhist monk. We should look at our impact when we eat, when we buy clothing, when we buy any of these things and use them, and ask, what's my impact on the world? The fact that I'm alive and breathing means that I have a lot of needs, and these needs are being met by using and relying on others. Is there a way that I can rely on others that causes the least harm to them, the least unnecessary pain? And the way the Buddha taught this was what he called the four requisites, which are, at the time, was a teaching for monks. He said that all beings need, or all, you know, of the students need to have clothing, to have shelter, food, and medicine, and that none of them should be deprived of any of those things. And I would go further to say that lay practitioners, we also need to have, you know, our jobs, our iPhones. Don't forget our iPhones now. Whatever. But certainly, we need some other stuff just to be, to stay viable in the world. But the point is not to, as the Buddha's path is known as the middle way, it's not about depriving ourselves, nor is it about indulging. It's not about becoming martyrs, nor is it about trying to find lasting happiness in something that cannot give us lasting happiness. Food cannot make that feeling of worthlessness or sadness go away. So eating in a way beyond simply trying to make myself comfortable enough so that I can find true happiness through my practice, through generosity, through being with people, through creativity. If I'm not eating simply to keep myself healthy enough so that I can engage in actions that will bring me happiness, but if I'm trying to get my happiness from eating, then I'm doing something very wrong. Likewise with buying clothes, and I am guilty because I buy too many hoodies and shorts. So we're all a work in progress here. I have to examine that. I am by far and away not a enlightened being. I'm doing the best I can, letting go of things that cause harm, letting go of places where I'm trying to fill up that emptiness with something. Because in the end, everything I purchase is not going to fill up loneliness or lack of purpose or low self-esteem in here. The only thing that answers that is inner work. Nothing out there can ever be smooshed into my brain to make it feel like I'm wonderful. I have to do that work in other ways. Now, finally, a lot of this can sound negative, but there are positives. The Buddha did very much teach about what he called appropriate contentment with things. If you've ever hung out with monks, and I've hung out with quite a number of them, they take an inordinate amount of joy in keeping their bowls and their robes and the few possessions that they have. They really get a lot of joy out of it, a lot of contentment. They really appreciate it. They don't appreciate it to the extent that it's attachment, where they're thinking about their bowls when they're meditating. And the story goes, I've told about Ajahn Chah, who said that who always had one mug while he teaches his students about impermanence and not to get attached to things. He always would drink from the Ajahn Chah mug, and nobody could drink from the Ajahn Chah mug but Ajahn Chah. And the students said, why do you get the Ajahn Chah mug where we have to use, you know, we don't get our own mugs, we have to just drink from whatever mug's available? And Ajahn Chah said, I get to drink from this mug because I know it's already broken. I know that one day I'll reach for it and it'll be broken and it will not upset me. I'm not that attached to it, that its demise will cause me any suffering. Therefore, I get to use my mug. And when you get to that place where you can hold on to something without being torn apart by the fact that it's not going to bring you lasting happiness and that it eventually will fall apart, when you can relate to things in that way, then you get your own mug too. Ajahn Chah then also said a very funny thing about Americans, which causes me a lot of laughter. I think it probably caused a little huffing here, but I like it. He said that Americans and Westerners were in spiritual practice like vultures, which he said, when he was asked, meant, he said, oh yes, we could get to really high-flying states when we meditate. He said, we're very impressive meditators. Some of the most impressive meditators, he said, were people who came from the West, and everybody else didn't have that that level of peace, because we were very professional at everything we do. But then he said, when we would feed like vultures, we would go down to the ground and eat anything. And what he meant by that is not just that we would, he was not talking about eating meat, he's talking about in our lives, we felt that we could do anything to earn a buck so that we could take that marvelous, you know, vacation and meditate. And that's not what it's about. Vultures can do it, but we can't. So it's very important to develop a sense of contentment. And finally, of course, to use the final analogy of tonight, in the Pali Canon, the Buddha talks often about how important all the inner tools we're developing are to help us have right livelihood. If I have inner stores of peace, if I'm comfortable in my own mind, if I'm at peace in my body, then if people do things at work I don't like, it will not cause me stress and suffering. If I have inner peace, if people do things I don't like, I can still have peace. If I'm peaceful in my own body and my own mind, then I'm not going to try to get my happiness from my career. I can still have a job, I can still do it well and creatively and focus when I'm there, but I will not bring that controlling, have to get what I need from you to work, because I've already got that inner peace within me. The Buddha used the analogy of a fortress, and he said that wisdom is like the military strategist. The fortress is under assault. And the military strategist can tell who's the enemy, what thoughts are not helpful, from which thoughts are skillful. That's the role of wisdom. The role of mindfulness, staying aware of the body and how it feels, that is the role of the sentry keeper, the gate person, who knows who to allow in, but who to not allow in. When to keep the gate closed to the outside and keep the awareness within. And finally, the peace that we develop through meditation, that's the food that we keep in the fortress that sustains us, so we don't have to go out into the enemy territory and get at war with the world. So I hope you got something from tonight's talk. That was an overview of right livelihood. I hope it brought some new perspectives to this. And now it's your turn to ask any questions or share any thoughts you have about this subject. And I thank you for listening.